Hi, everyone, and welcome back to The Blast Podcast, a show where we believe movies can be more than just movies. I'm your host, Steve Watts, joined as always by my co-host, Eagle Clan. Climb! And today, we are going to be quickly running through our weekly watches before talking about In a Violent Nature, which we got to see together on the big screen last night. I'm very excited for this pod. Before we dive in, let's hear a word from our sponsor. It's official. The Blast app is ready for launch. We will be announcing an official launch date soon, but the best way to stay on top of updates is to sign up for our newsletter at www.blastmovies.net. All right, Ty, what have you watched this week?
Now that I'm at home and my parents don't seem to do anything fun after the workday, they put on a movie on their own without asking me for any input. They threw on The Hunt, the 2020 movie that came out during COVID. It was straight to streaming. I think it flew under the radar. It got a mini buzz, but knew nothing about it. Sat down. It has an awesome opening scene that just looped me in right away. It's not what you're expecting. It kind of gives me James Gunn's Suicide Squad vibes. Ooh. At least from an opening perspective. It does a really funny thing with social commentary. The action's fun. This is a dumb, fun movie. I know it's not for everyone. It definitely wasn't for my parents, but I had an absolute blast with this one. I'd give it, objectively, it's somewhere around like a C-, mm-hmm. but blast grade, I'll give it a B. You know, it was a good at-home watch. I had fun.
Who's the lead actress in this
could not tell you what her name is, but she's great. There's a great bit with her character that I was all in on, but I don't know her name. But there are a couple notables that pop up in the opening scene, and you think that they're going to be the leads, and they're not. That's not a spoiler or anything, but please check this movie out. It's absolutely a Steve movie. Absolutely.
Very cool. Very cool. I will be on the lookout. I remember wanting to watch this when it came out, but I don't know if you know this. My mom is like very, she just hates violent movies, really, for the most part. Like Die Hard and stuff like that she's in on, but like the John Wick and stuff like that, where violence is very like the driving plot point, she's kind of out on. Just not her shebang. So we never got around to this as a family. I mean, that was senior year of high school, and I'm stuck in the house with my parents.
Yeah, it's definitely not a Mama Watts movie. There was some gore that made me squeamish. You know, I'm a softy, but it's definitely present here. But a good watch. You'll like it.
Nice.
And then I had a couple at-home watches as well that were just always a blast. My favorite movie to watch during the workday. So I have a setup where I've got my monitor for work and my laptop, and I'm working there. And then I have my other monitor and my PlayStation on the other side of the desk. Mm-hmm. And anytime that I'm just doing busy Excel work and I need something on the background, I won't listen to music. I'll put on Dead Reckoning Part 1 because I have Paramount Plus on my PlayStation, and it's like my safe haven of a movie. It's either Maverick or Dead Reckoning. And the first 20 minutes of this movie just locks me in right away, even though it's a slow burn, even though it doesn't have that same feel Fallout does. I just love this movie. I can't wait for part 2. And every time I watch it, it still feels like an A-blast movie.
Awesome. Where does this sit on your rankings for MI, like however many months later we are? 12 months later? Has it already been a year?
Yeah, no, next month. Okay. It was a July. I think it was the week before Barbenheimer. That's why it kind of tanked.
Okay.
So I think I'm so torn with this. Fallout is clearing away the number one for me. Mm-hmm. What I keep battling back and forth on is whether or not Dead Reckoning Part 1 or Rogue Nation is the two spot. Mm-hmm. And it just comes down to what I've watched more recently, and in this case, Dead Reckoning. I think it's more fun for a longer stretch of time, but I think the third act of Rogue Nation might be the best of Mission Impossible.
Interesting. I don't even remember watching Rogue Nation. I'm planning before Dead Reckoning Part 2. I wanted to do it before Part 1, but just ran short of time to marathon through the whole series. I got through 3, I think, last time, and then I was like, shit, well, time to see it.
Oh, so you didn't see the new ones before Part 1?
No, sadly. I've seen them before, but I think the last time I watched them was like when they came out, as they came out.
Interesting.
So I'm iffy on the details. That's why I was kind of like, huh, Rebecca, which one is it? Hall?
Rebecca Ferguson.
Rebecca Ferguson's in this. Yeah, I didn't remember that.
Oh, what a waste. What a waste not seeing the other movies. Yeah. Seeing Dead Reckoning. That really stinks.
Kind of a shame. But this is still, I think, my number two favorite of the franchise as far as I can remember. So it speaks to the quality of it that I can go in not knowing much about where we're sitting in this timeline and still have a great time in movie. Like, what is this movie, number eight?
Seven. And the crazy part of it, you mentioned, like, it's an easy watch for anyone, but it's also, it does a great job of like paying homage and like rewarding the fans that have seen all of them. There's a bunch of callbacks to one. Like, there's a magic trick that Tom Cruise does. It's just little things like that, that Cruise, McCrory, and this team have just gotten right with this franchise and got it right again with DR Part One. I'm slightly scared that because this one tanked at the box office, like, we may be seeing the end of the franchise after this next one. I saw that there were delays in the production because there was an incident with a submarine that they're using, a real submarine.
Wow.
So I hope that we don't get it where the budget gets super inflated because of delays and then it doesn't perform and then it goes out in a sour note.
Yeah, that would suck. I hope that. So would you rather it end after part two then? Is that what you're saying? Because there might not be the bigger budgets going forwards? Or are you hoping that this makes it so that there will be more?
I think this will be the last one that gets greenlit for all this money. Even though TC is the biggest star in the world, like, he can't defend bad numbers. So, and I think he's got a bunch of projects in the pipeline. Like, I think Warner Brothers just made a huge contract with him to make some new movies. Oh, maybe. Wow. Edge of Tomorrow too. So just be on standby. Like, I think a lot of cool stuff from Cruise in the next couple of years. But saw DR Part One again, my last watch of the week. I went to a wedding this weekend. And anyone that knows me, at least in my high school group, when I go to a wedding, I let loose, I let it rip. And this was no different. I got absolutely shit canned at this wedding, and I felt so ashamed the next morning that I listened to the ending monologue of the Batman for 30 minutes straight in the car ride home. Wow. I was in so much pain that it like motivated me. I'm like, I need to stop doing this. I need to go home and go to the gym with my dad. I'm so embarrassed. So then I went home. I ripped the gym, drank a ton of water, and I watched the Batman and just locked back in. I reset. I have to become more again, and we're good to go. This is, I think, with each watch just climbs the ranks of like greatest blast movies for me. Even like in the theater, I left and like I felt it change me in real time, but with each watch, it like it evolves into something new.
Awesome, dude. Yeah, I have only rewatched this once since it left theaters, as you know, but I revisit certain scenes a lot more than rewatching the whole thing. I mean, 3 hours is a tough runtime, even though like when you sit down to watch it, it doesn't feel like a lot, but finding the time to sit down and watch it is a little tough. I can't wait for Batman 2 though, dude.
2026 sucks. Yeah. We got some time. Are you interested in the Penguin at all?
No.
Neither am I, which is weird. You know, like, I think it's like, how do I explain this? Like, it's not show fatigue, but it's extensions of movies that have been built in IP or IPs that have been built through movies fatigue.
Yeah,
like Dune's got a show coming out. I just don't care.
I didn't watch any of the Continental, the John Wick show.
Me neither.
It's I mean, we've talked a lot recently, I think, about big IPs being just so overdone right now. It feels like every time you go to the movies, I mean, we saw how many trailers last night, and I think they were all sequels. Bad Boys 4, Twisters, like, even though we're looking forward to that one, it's all just established IPs. So it kind of sucks that's the spot we're in right now. But, I mean, you got to find the ones you like and, I guess, run with it. Especially when smaller movies like In a Violent Nature end up kind of sucking.
We'll get to that soon, I'm sure. But those are my three watches of the week. Let's rip through yours.
First watch of the week for me is I Know What You Did Last Summer. I got to see this in theaters with Morgan. It was a pretty great time. I mean, you know me and you know how much I love the slasher genre. And I feel like this is kind of the last great tried and true, like, the plot doesn't really matter. Let's throw these people together in a whodunit and make people guess about who the killer is with some fun kills. I love this movie very much. I think I've actually seen it 5 times in the last 2 years.
Whoa.
Yeah. And the first time I watched it, I think I gave it a 2 stars out of 5 on Letterboxd. And slowly it's risen. I think I gave it a 4.5 this time.
What's changed? You just have fallen more in love with the slasher? This has a charm to it that you didn't recognize before? What is it?
I think I've fallen more in love with the slasher. Watching all of Carpenter's filmography helps, obviously. And just in general, like, if I'm working on blast stuff, usually I'll find something that I don't have to pay full attention to, and that tends to be a Dario Argento giallo or a shitty slasher from the 80s that, like, nobody really cares about but is a fun watch, you know.
I can't believe I've never seen this one, because I might be the biggest Freddie Prinze fan of all time,
dude. I hate Freddie Prinze. I think this book, does your love for Freddie Prinze stem from his Star Wars takes?
No.
Okay.
There's this weird baseball movie he did with Matthew Lillard in the early 2000s that I watched a ton as a kid. Fell in love with it. I had Rebels, obviously. And then he was in 24, a show that I watched with my dad as a kid.
Mm.
He was one of, like, the main CTU agents. And I just fell in love with him. And now, like, anytime I see him, puts a smile on my face. One of those guys, kind of like, I think the comp for, you know, our younger audience, if there is a younger audience, is like Dylan O'Brien. Like, certified star, good looking guy in a bunch of big projects, and then just, like, vanished like that.
Yeah, that's an interesting comp. Freddie Prinze for me is, I mean, I hate him for his Star Wars takes that you always send me. I love him as Kanan. I think he does fucking awesome as that, but in interviews and stuff, he comes across pretty much as Fred does in those Scooby-Doo movies to me. Like, he seems like a big meatball, which I guess isn't a bad thing. But speaking of Matthew Lillard and Freddie Prinze doing a baseball movie, I think those Scooby-Doo live action movies only work because the cast really liked each other.
That is a very fair point. I like both of those movies, honestly.
And I
it's
do
not,
too.
It's not even like a, well, it might be, but if, I don't think it's just guilty pleasure. Like, you can tell it's not, like, so bad it's good. It's like you can tell everyone involved is having fun,
mm-hmm.
and that matters.
Yeah, agreed. The only one, Velma, whoever played her, I don't remember her name. She seems like kind of an outsider, and she's not really in any other projects with them. So
yeah, but she's notable. I mean, she's in a lot of the Avengers movies. She's Clint's wife.
Right.
Yeah.
Moving on. Loved seeing this in theaters. Awesome blast experience. But the next day, I went and saw The Strangers Chapter 1. Mm. And this time, I didn't just bring Morgan. I brought Morgan and my buddy Samson from Wesleyan. He is, like, probably the biggest horror fan I know. Funny story. I was watching Talk to Me with Lem and AJ a couple weeks ago. And Lem was freaking out about how scary this was. And even AJ was going, like, ooh, eesh. And I texted Samson. I was like, did you think this was scary? And he was like, no. And I was like, okay, well, at least I'm not, like, alone in my desensitization. He'll pull out random movies like Joyride. He was like, oh, I think the last time I saw that was when it came out, which was when he was like 6.
Yeah. No, dude, well, I don't want to bust on your friend, but Joyride, 2001.
Okay. I'm throwing out, ideas. Like, his favorite childhood movie, I think, was Jeepers Creepers.
Got it.
So he, like, grew up on the horror genre and is the nicest fucking person I know. So all that violence, in media stuff, I don't buy it. Samson's living anti-proof of that. This, though, Strangers Chapter 1 was more of a remake than a prequel or a sequel or a reimagining even, and it kind of sucked. The writing was horrible. The acting was horrible. You know, I think my least favorite trope in horror movies is the inhaler MacGuffin of, like, shit, well, why would these people ever come out of the place they're locked in right now? The inhaler. And it always makes me mad. This is another one. He leaves her at the house alone to go back to the car and get his inhaler. They like go to this random town. The car breaks down. I actually think I had a pretty good Letterboxd review of this. I said that the strangers in the original Strangers are the 2015-16 Golden State Warriors.
And who is this?
In here, they're the 14-15. But I might be mixing up years. Whichever one they had the best record and they didn't win it.
Okay.
That's what they are in this. I don't want to like necessarily spoil anything, but this is chapter one of three. And so characters will be returning. And in The Strangers Pray at Night, obviously, I don't know if you know this, but...
I don't, and I don't care. You can spoil okay. away.
In The Strangers Pray at Night, the strangers all die. That's this year's Golden State Warriors. I think Draymond is the dad, the big guy. And then I think Clay is probably the doll face, and Steph is the last one.
Okay. Interesting comps. I mean,
Jack's gonna love this. It's gonna make him watch his first horror movie ever.
That's how we need to start breaking it down. Yeah. It's like In a Violent Nature is like the 2022 Sacramento Kings or something.
In a Violent Nature is the 2024 White Sox. yeah, I am excited for chapter two and chapter three, not because the acting or anything is very promising. It was directed fairly well, I'll say. But I just am a sucker for these movies. So even though it was beat for beat the same story as the first one, I still had a great time here, having fun with my girlfriend and my good friend. And even though there were 24 minutes of trailers at this one.
A lot of trailers.
It was like 12 trailers. It was a lot of trailers. Last theater watch of the week is Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. This is my favorite movie of the year by far, so far.
Oh boy.
Yeah, it's Star Wars but monkey.
Oh boy. I don't know, man. Like, I think it's maybe because of my love for war. I wasn't ready for a sequel. Like, I was actively rooting against this movie. I think it's objectively good. I just never had that like blast moment of like, I feel like this was earned. I feel like I'm having a great time, like I did with Avatar: The Way of Water. Like, it never felt like that.
I see. That's fair. The last time I watched War before, like, I had watched all three of the previous movies with Morgan leading up to this. But before that, the last time I had seen it was when it had first come out to streaming. I didn't even see it in theaters. So I didn't have a super emotional connection with the franchise like I know you do. So maybe that has to do with it. But I was a big fan of the voice performances in this. But also, I think that they dove deeper into the ethics of imperialism than Star Wars. And I think that it is a strangely relevant topic for like the current events of the world right now. And just in general, I mean, I was a big fan of just about everything in this movie. I will say it drags at a few points, which I know you said you agree with.
What it does a great job of, though, it's like the first movie all year, I think, besides Dune, where like I'm actively interested in what the sequel does. It does a great job of getting you excited for what's to come.
It does. And it's hard for, I mean, you know how much I hate big IPs. So it's hard to make me root for a sequel. And this one has me actively anticipating one.
Yep, for sure.
Last watch of the week, I did want to shout out Don't Breathe because I checked this out because I keep on seeing the Alien Romulus trailer. And Fede Alvarez is a master of suspense. And I think Don't Breathe is the perfect like blueprint for an Alien movie.
Don't Breathe is so good. I talk about this movie with my mom like once a year, like once every like 6 months. We both loved it. The one thing that we are a little frustrated with is there's a certain decision in this movie that like vilifies the character. And I feel like you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, and I think like we're obviously well beyond spoiler territory here, but it's just more of a let's not talk about this kind of topic.
There is a scene with a turkey baster. If you've seen the movie, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Like, what's so cool about Don't Breathe as a premise is You got these three intruders breaking into a blind guy's house, and the blind guy starts to try and mow them down. And the big thing is, who do I root for here? And that's always like a question you're asking yourself as an audience member. And then there's this moment with the turkey baster, and it kind of answers the question for you. And I think that was a terrible choice.
Is this the scariest dog in all of cinema, by the way?
What is that movie?
Cujo?
Maybe? Yeah. That was what I was coming to. So probably.
It's got to be up there. Like, this thing is like hounding our protagonist through the vents and out in the car even. One of the smartest protagonists ever in a horror movie, by the way, is the lead of this movie. I can't remember her name.
Has she been in anything since? I don't recognize her from anything.
I don't think so. But the one of the guys is the 13 Reasons Why Scream 5 guy.
Yep, he pops in like the weirdest spots. But I like that guy. He was in Lost for a season, the final season. Did you ever make it that far?
No.
Ah,
only okay. Like 3.5, I think.
Oh, well, that's so frustrating because, not frustrating, but heartbreaking because after I rewatched Lost, as I got older, 4 ended up being my favorite. And there are some great Steve episodes embedded in 4 that it sucks that you didn't make it that far. But
once I'm 90 years old and I've seen every movie on the face of the earth, and I'll get to the shows.
Okay, we'll tap in. That's a whole nother battle. In a Violent Nature. Let's talk through this theater experience. We got the chance to see a movie in person together, and it's been a running bit for the last 2 years of us doing this that no matter what movie we see, if we see it together, that thing's going to stink. And with In a Violent Nature, it really is no different. I don't think this movie stinks, but it's definitely not good.
I actually scored it worse than you, and that surprises me because you know it takes very little for a horror movie to impress me, but nothing about this really did impress me. Going back to the theater experience, though, I can't complain, really. Kendall 11, great time, right?
Yep. Didn't even need any concessions. Just brought my water bottle in. We sat down. We're the only ones in the theater for like 10 minutes or so, and then people started rolling in. But I felt like everyone was like super respectful. No one was talking. The only time people were talking were reactions to the kills, which is always like a fun element to horror. Is like, as long as the theater's engaged, I don't care if they're loud. So, yeah. Like, no issues on that front.
I will say the dude in front of us had his ringer on his phone.
Really?
Did you catch that?
No, but
he was getting like GroupMe notifications like every 2 minutes. I was losing it.
I hate it when someone has their Apple Watch on and they make a move and it like lights up.
He was doing that
too. I caught him do that, and it shit pisses me off. But it was fine other than that.
Yeah, it was a pretty great theater experience. The movie though, I mean, the premise is really just girl steals necklace from dead guy. Dead guy hunts down entire group of campers.
Okay, I mean, even simpler than that, it's just Friday the 13th, but from the Friday the 13th, but from the perspective of the killer. It takes place not from his POV, but essentially a camera is following him as he makes these kills throughout the movie.
Yeah,
it's a very interesting premise, but I don't think it works as a full like feature length film, and I think that's the problem with this movie. Like, where does it fall short for you beyond that?
For me, my biggest issue is that I don't think that it was using the way it's shot to its like intention. Like, the way this is shot actually reminds me a lot of A Green Knight and A Ghost Story. It's very Lowry-esque, in my opinion, with these long, very static shots. Even though there is some movement involved, it's very muted. The sound is very quiet. And I mean, I've been sitting around trying to think of what the hell this movie was trying to say by doing that for the last, I don't know how many hours. So that's always frustrating to me. I wish that they were intentional with it, because they could have probably done something cool with like how some violence is quiet and we're used to seeing like this big, like exploding action movie violence on the big screen. And instead this is very quiet, but instead it just feels like it's wasting your fucking time.
Yes, this is a slow 90 minutes, and it's because it's, to your point, like, it's all style over substance. Like, you can't find anything that this movie says because it's not trying to say anything. Like, I can envision this, like, the opening, like, 10 minutes being pitched to a studio or, like, made as a Kickstarter, and, like, it gets a ton of money to get greenlit as a feature-length film. And the people that, like, shot the short film were like, oh, shit. Like, how do we make this a full movie? It really does drag, and it shouldn't. It's a weird take on it, but it's essentially just a slasher film.
Yeah, and I just don't know. Like, a lot of the shots in this movie are just the killer walking. And he walks and walks and walks, and they cut between different locations to tell you, yeah, just so you know, we're taking it easy on you. This could have been 3.5 hours of him walking. And I don't think that works. Like, is it the march of time towards your death, your inevitable death? It makes no sense to me. And I guess you're right. Maybe they aren't trying to say anything.
Yeah, which stinks. But at least with this style and this approach, we got some pretty gnarly kills. Honestly, probably the nastiest movie I've seen on the big screen. I haven't seen any of the Terrifiers, but some of these kills, I felt like I was going to get up and throw up. I think at one point I said out loud, I think I'm going to throw up.
Yeah.
I have mine for sure, but what was your worst kill, or like the one you hated the most?
At the risk of viewers turning it off here, like, maybe we should put in a time skip warning for Jack to.
Yeah, if you're going to get squeamish.
Fast forward like 2.5 minutes or so.
It's that bad.
Yeah.
Truly.
So the killer has these hooks that are chained together, and he punches through the stomach of this girl, hooks her head, and then drags her head through the hole in her stomach.
Ugh.
And that I don't think I will ever erase from my mind. It was pretty horrifying.
I don't know if you saw me when we were in the theater, but that was happening as he's like snapping her spine and like ripping her head through her stomach. My jaw like legitimately was dropped for the next 5 minutes after that kill. Just
yep. So was I, and the guy behind me was going, whoa, whoa.
It was bad. It was really bad.
It was.
That was definitely the hardest kill for me to watch. But the most horrifying kill happens later in the movie. There's this poor guy is trying to save our group that we're kind of half following. And he essentially sacrifices himself. He's fighting this Jason-like character. And Jason gets a hold of him and breaks his back, or like crushes his spine. And he's paralyzed now. And instead of just killing him, he drags him into this like lumber yard shop thing. So this guy is fully aware of what's going on. He's awake.
You can see him blinking.
Yes.
And that's when I was like, ugh.
And the killer like puts him through a, what do you call it? It was like,
it's a log splitter, I think.
Yes. It was like an automated log splitter. And he puts the guy's arm in it first. So the guy's got to watch his arm get chopped off. And then after the arm is off, he pulls the whole body and lines the neck up and decapitates him. And he has to see it all happen. And it's super slow and torturous. That's horror's, I don't even know if it's within comprehension. It's beyond comprehension. But that was the scariest kill, I think.
I think the one that made me the most nauseous, surprisingly, is not the head through the stomach. It's the he takes this axe and just goes at this guy for like a minute and a half. And you just see him and you keep hearing the gross noises. And it was a little bit funny because the main girl in the cast was just standing there like, oh, like, what do you even do there? And it's, I don't know, for some reason that really got me. And it was like the last straw. That's the last kill of the movie.
That was I think that was my favorite element of the movie, was that comedic moment where you find out that the killer has like super hearing and can hear everyone whispering.
Yeah.
And they're talking about this game plan to sneak up and distract him. And the guy sneaks up on him. And like 2 seconds into his like distraction, he gets mowed down by an axe and gets turned into like a pumpkin.
It was kind of a meta moment almost, because you see so many times like in the horror movies where he starts the big spiel of, hey, ugly ass, like, come this way. I'm right here. And just, yeah, he's dead in half a second. It was pretty hilarious.
There were some tough ones, but I guess the only other, like, saving grace of this movie, at least the theater experience, we sit down, trailers are over, the lights go off, and the Shudder logo pops on. I had no idea this was a Shudder original, but, like, when I saw that, I was like, ah, you know what? Like, maybe this is going to be a banger. Like, is Shudder starting to, like, create that appeal just by being, as a brand, I say? I don't know.
They've sneakily been cooking. There's one movie I want to watch, actually, with you. It's called Deliver Us From... No, I can't even remember what it's called, but it's about, like, these two guys in this small Spanish town find out that one of the women in their town is going to be giving birth to the devil. And then all of the women get pregnant, and they have to figure out, like, who's going to give birth to the devil.
Holy shit.
A really awesome concept, and Fennessy and Ryan talk about it a ton. So I'm all in on that. I just haven't gotten around to it yet. But, I mean, Late Night with the Devil seemed like a fairly big hit among general audiences, even though we weren't huge fans of it.
Yeah.
Speak No Evil, probably my favorite Shudder original film, is now getting remade into English, which I'm not a fan of, but I mean, that's probably good for them money wise. I think that they are starting to build themselves a brand, almost like a horror version of A24.
Yeah. I think you give it like 8 years. Like, how cool would it be if like Flanagan did one? Because he, like, respects the brand, or, like, Stockman ends up doing a Shudder original or something.
Well, they did get, it's VHS. The most recent VHS film had a short directed by Derrickson, Scott Derrickson.
Oh, that's
right,
yeah.
And a couple of other big names, because, I mean, that franchise is just tied to so much horror success. But I think that Shudder, I mean, they're clearly doing their jobs as producers.
Yeah, I don't know. When it popped up on the screen, I was excited, almost like an A24 movie. But beyond that, beyond a couple interesting, gruesome kills, this movie didn't really move the needle for me. We're still yet to see a good movie together.
It's never going to happen, dude. yeah. It's I'm getting worried. Like, so for those of you who don't know, Ty is going to be around town for the summer. And that means we're going to get to see some movies together. And now I'm kind of worried that they're all just going to fucking suck.
If Twister sucks, I will be heartbroken. I think that is going to be the greatest, like, banger of, like, that just screams America. I'm so pumped for Twisters.
At the very least, we have the Mask re-release.
Yeah, that's a safe play. Do re-releases count? Like, I don't know if we can do that, you know?
I mean, it's an asterisk, but at least we'll get to see a good one.
Yeah, that's fair.
I suppose we saw Dark Knight, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that doesn't count.
Okay.
We can do better. I don't want to see Deadpool and Wolverine with you. Like, I don't want to jinx it. Like, I need that movie to be good and, like, save Marvel, bring back superheroes from the fatigue.
So, I think, are we done talking about this movie? Because I do want to briefly discuss Deadpool and Wolverine for a sec.
Sure.
Something about Deadpool being in the MCU makes me not really like this movie. Like, his tongue-in-cheek meta jokes, I think, don't work now that he's a part of this massive universe/business. I mean, did Disney own Marvel for the first two Deadpool movies? I'm not positive, but I don't think so, because they came out when I was in high school.
Oh, gosh. No, I'm trying to do the timeline, because, like, Civil War came out and Sony and Marvel were having their battle. I feel like they had their paws on it, but even if they didn't and it was, like, still just a separate entity, I'm hopeful that they've kind of just let them make a Deadpool movie. Like, it's rated R, it's bloody, they're swearing, they're poking fun at the MCU, at Feige, at some of the characters. I think there's a lot of potential for them to do this the right way. I don't think they're going to play nice with the Marvel.
Okay. I hope so. It just feels weird. Like, the voice has changed a little bit, if that makes sense.
In what way?
Like, it's coming from... When it was just Marvel, it felt like it was coming from a smaller superhero studio. And Now it's coming from the biggest film company in the world.
Yeah, that's a very interesting outlook on it. And now you got me a little a little concerned. Like, I there's always going to be slight concern when it comes to the MCU these days. I can feel the fanboy in me coming out, hoping that this like sets things right. Like Force Awakens, like when the guy gives the map to Poe Dameron and says like, this will begin to make things right. Yeah. I have a feeling this movie has that potential. Like, makes fun of all the bullshit they put us through since Endgame and just resets the timeline in some capacity, or just like honestly ends the MCU as we know it, and we start getting original projects like Fantastic Four, and they go the X-Men route. Like, I think they have a chance to do something super cool. I hope they do it.
Okay. That's a fair outlook. Back to In a Violent Nature, then. I guess we do have a couple more things to cover. Would you rather watch this over Friday the 13th?
No. Not in the slightest. I think this is a really interesting premise, but only as a short film. I think that Friday the 13th, how the slasher operates, I think that works better and is like an easier watch. This was like watching paint dry for like 80 minutes and there's some cool kills.
That's, yeah, a good take. I think I prefer Friday. Some of the Friday movies are bad though.
yeah.
Like if we're saying Friday the 13th 4, I'm all in. Yeah. I'll watch that over this anytime, but like, Friday the 13th 3D, it's closer than you might think.
Okay. I haven't seen all of them, probably for a good reason.
Yeah, but Jason Takes Manhattan. Do you think this will get a sequel?
Interesting. I want to see how it does at the box office, but I think there's some sneaky appeal to this concept. Like, people are into, like, you call it what you want, but they did this with the Saw movies, like the gore porn, the torture porn. Like, people are like weird and are all in on this kind of stuff. And if they like the slower pace, like good cinematography, I could see this having some, maybe not a theatrical release, but it gets a sequel.
Huh. Maybe like a Terrifier 2.
Yes. Thing. I could see it.
Crowdfunded ish kind of feel. I wouldn't see a sequel personally.
I would not. I'm not rooting for it. I'm just saying I could see a world where it happens.
Yeah.
One more thing from this movie we didn't talk about that's kind of driving me crazy now. This is spoiler warning. So if you're going to see this movie, just cut the pod. It's over. We're going to talk many spoilers here. But I hated the decision for them to show the killer's face like for no reason, like 40 minutes in the movie. Why do that?
Yeah. I don't know. I didn't even like when he put on the mask and then they showed his face, because I think the mask looked kind of stupid.
It did. I was really intrigued by the camera work they were doing to, like, we talk about this in Joyride, like the unknown is so much scarier. Mm-hmm. I think not seeing his face and seeing what's going on with this dude makes him that much creepier. And like almost every camera angle is from like the back of his head. And then we get a close up of his face, and like, it looks good, but you can tell this was made not by like students, but like on a lower budget.
That's when it's also very apparent that this is very heavily influenced, at least by Friday the 13th. They made the killer into a person with special needs who was murdered as a child or died as a child. I don't think that really works. I also think some of the exposition wasn't needed. Like, we see the people take the necklace and then the guy wake up, right? I don't think we need to hear the long explanation of how this necklace means everything to him, and that's what was keeping him down there, and you need to give it back. Like, we as viewers know that.
No, I completely agree. I just, my only explanation for that is that scene where they explain it is probably like 7-8 minutes. That's an additional chunk of that runtime to make it worthy of a theatrical release.
Like, again, dude, we just need, theaters need to start showing short films. It would be so fucking cool.
I would show up. I that's like a weird stigma, because I feel like there's a ton of people that are sick of like the 2.5 to 3 hour movies. Like, they'd rather do a speed run.
Dude, everybody I know has TikTok brain rot. Like, they would absolutely go and watch a 15-minute movie. That's
I'd throw $5 at a short film. You kidding me?
Yeah. Even, I mean, if it's a short, you can show it enough times to probably charge even like $3 or $4. Yeah. So, I don't know. Once Blast has theaters, expect short films to be showing. There's so much there. Like, programming an hour and a half of short films could also happen. Anyways, I think that's all I have to say about this movie. Our streak of bad luck continues.
Well, We'll figure it out. Maybe our only hope is if we see Hitman in theaters.
Ooh.
But I think we're going to miss it. I think it's going to be a Netflix watch.
Damn. Twisters?
Twisters is going to be one. I really hope it's good. And we won't see it together, I don't think. But Inside Out 2, I'm sure will be good.
I'm not excited for Inside Out 2.
Yeah, brother. Okay. We'll talk about this on the next pod then.
Yeah. All right. Thank you all for listening to this episode of The Last Podcast. If you're watching this on YouTube or anything, let us know your feedback on our new setup. Been working on trying to make a space for us to shoot these while Ty's in town. Be sure to check out our website at blastmovies.net for all our latest information and news, as well as pod clips and other content on our TikTok at blast.movies and our Instagram at blast_movies_. Thanks again for listening, and we'll catch you next week.